Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, speaking to you live from Washington, D.C. This is the Black Belt Wall Street and the Black Belt Biscuit. And our discussion tonight will be Black Belt Wall Street and the Black Belt Biscuit. We will give our audience a chance to come on, and we will be right back after give us a few moments, and we'll be right back on. Sisters, the Black Belt Wall Street, as you know, started really during the time of slavery. And the Black Belt at that time was known for the richest soil. And this richest soil, of course, is where the large amount of African Americans was concentrated. And these areas, of course, range from Texas throughout the South all the way up to New York. And when Booker T. Washington, who put together the business program, Booker T. Washington, I would say his staff, put together a business program that started the Black Belt business districts. And Tulsa, Oklahoma, at that time was called the Greenwood Business District. And it was the Greenwood Business District that invited Booker T. Washington to come to Tulsa. And he did. The Greenwood District, of course, flew to Alabama, where Booker T. was, and brought him back to Oklahoma in their own jets, their own airplanes. Tulsa Business District had its own airports, and of course the rich, wealth of the Greenwood Business District plans was put together to start investing in the Black Belt District. And by investing their monies and coming up with business plans to stimulate economics throughout the South, the Greenwood District and Booker T. Washington and the Black Belt was financed. And because of this, these financing that was able to come from the Greenwood District, you had monies now that could start economical development in all of the Black Black Belt districts, are again what you would call the Black Soil area, again, that range from Texas. And the Black Soil area, brothers and sisters, was no more than African American slaves, and all of the wealth that they built from their productions that was coming out of the South, that was making this country very, very wealthy. And at that time, it was the South that had the greatest wealth because of the large produce, especially produce such as cotton and other, but cotton itself, within itself, as a commodity, and today that is still the most valuable commodity in the world today, was then and is today, is still cotton. And the Greenwood District, along with the Black Belt, business district, they were able to share up the free, or to pay the debt, more or less, of many, many African Americans that was under what the laws of the rules, I would say, of sharecropping. And of course, sharecropping is where many African Americans were stuck on many plantations because they had debts that they just could not pay because of more or less tricks that was put on them. For instance, if you're if it was $5,000 or $10,000 that it would take to run for an African American to run his farm, and he would at the end of the harvesting season, he would come up with his $10,000 of debt, but because of surcharges that usually was put on to African American, hidden surcharges, there it is. And so again, rather than your debt being $10,000, which you can pay off, there was a surcharge of $4,000, which you don't have. So now you have to work another year or whatever time it's going to take to pay off the additional $4,000. And of course, before that time period was up within that year, because you're waiting on another harvest, then now your debt has continued to grow from what it was. In other words, back to not only the $4,000 you were short, but the $10,000 that you normally owe. So there was just a continuation of debt that you wasn't able to pay off. And therefore, if you stayed on the farms, and of course you couldn't leave by law as long as there was a debt. Until your debt was paid, you couldn't leave these plantations. So it was the Black Belt, along with the Greenwood business district, that was able to stimulate monies in these Black communities. And when I say stimulate monies, they started their own financial institutions in most Black areas. They, not only did they start banks, they started huge insurance companies. Some of those companies, several large insurance companies started during that time, such as North Carolina Mutual, and there's a few more. And of course, there was banks that was also in African-American communities. African-American communities during the time of the Greenwood District and during the time of segregation was able to grow their communities all over the South, all the way from, again, from Texas, throughout the South, all the way to New York, to include Chicago and, I mean, Illinois, Chicago and Detroit and parts of Ohio, where many of the stimulus or many of the cash flows, a bit from the business districts that Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood District together was able to start freeing up. And of course, they're paying off the debt for sharecropping. Now African Americans was able to leave the South because if you and because of that reason, that's where the Great Migration started. But before the Great Migration started, it was Henry Ford, about 3 years before the ending of sharecropping. Henry Ford had made the Model T. And that Model T was selling at that time, the first one that came out, it was selling for $100. But of course, back in those days, then you're talking about the early 30s, the $100 was quite a bit of money. So, of course, most African Americans at that time could not afford the Model T. But after around 3 years of the car being made and in production, after 3 years of ownership for the white society that could afford the car, after 3 years it was a used car, and so most of the new car owners ready to buy new cars 3 years later. And so by having the original Model T after 3 years being a used car and they're buying new cars, of course, at this time, this is how the used car business came into play. About 3 years after the Model T was made, now you have the new car business. The used car business. And it was the used car business now that Model T that cost $100. Now you probably could get one for 50 or even 25 and even as low as $15. But again, you have to understand $25 and $15 wasn't a lot of money, but it was still a pretty good savings. And so, but anyway, it was when the used car business came into play is where African Americans now started buying that Model T, and that was one of the main transportations that was used for African Americans to start the migration as to where they start moving to the north out of the south. And of course, those migrations went anywhere like Chicago, Detroit, Ohio, and northern cities, of course, New York and all of the northern cities is where you would see the migration. For most African Americans that left the South, these are the areas that was moved. But also, even before the Great Migration, the Black Belt Wall Street was responsible for many black businesses that started much earlier. And one of the most famous black businesses that was started by the Black Belt was Marcus Garvey. His movement, his financing started from his business started from the monies that he was able to borrow from the Black Belt. Also, even famous organizations, well-known organizations, such as the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Again, the Black Belt was financed many of these organizations, not only, and many, many others, the Cotton Club. That's how the Cotton Club was built. All came from the monies that was able to come from the Black Belt. As a matter of fact, history shows that during segregation, the best economical times for African Americans was during segregation, where we was had our own businesses and was doing our own business planning in our own communities. It's reported that the dollar bill at that time stayed in our communities as much as 40 months before it circulated out of our communities. And we know how powerful the Greenwood District in Oklahoma, they had businesses that ranged for 100 square blocks of some of the most famous businesses in all the world, but I wouldn't be mistaken at the time if it wasn't all the world. The Greenwood District and those that started the Greenwood District, and the monies that they were getting from that, what they, that the all that was in their communities before it was taken away, that was that all produced the cash flow that that built the Tulsa, the Greenwood District in Tulsa, and also again all of the businesses in the Black Belt. And that's how so the Black Belt Wall Street districts ran, of course, in many African-American communities all the way from Texas to New York. And the most famous of all of the businesses in the Greenwood District was the most famous known was Black Belt Wall Street. And Black Belt Wall Street, the Greenwood District give Black Belt Wall Street its name and stopped calling them the Greenwood District and started calling them the Black Belt Wall Street because of that was our Wall Street at that time. So the Greenwood District and Black Belt Wall Street, until now, of course, we know that the destruction of the Greenwood District that happened in the early 20s, and that destruction, and of course, not only was it a destruction, but it was a takeover. Everything in Tulsa, all the everything in in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the hundreds and maybe even thousands of people that died because white folks from all over the world wanted to, the power of that economical power that the oil that had been discovered in Tulsa, Oklahoma, was producing. And the Greenwood District and Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District, of course, becoming a very famously known as Black Wall Street. And after, again, that destruction of Black Wall Street, it was meant that the Black Wall Street communities would wouldn't have the economical powers to continue after they had attacked and destroyed the Greenwood District, but fortunately enough, the plan that Booker T. Washington and the Black Belt District had put together, and the like I said, and all the banks and the financial institutions that had been in existence throughout the South at this time, just because they destroyed the Greenwood, a Black Belt Wall Street in Tulsa, that did not stop the Black Belt districts. The Black Belt districts continued, and they continued to build even after the destruction of the Greenwood of Black Wall Street that was called by the Black Belt District. Yes, Black, and of course that name Black Belt, I'm sorry, the name Wall Street, after the destruction, white folks put a to vault the name Black Belt Wall Street. Black Belt Wall Street, they have patents. They have patents on that name. And today, not only do they control Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the Green Biscuit has been totally taken away, all the oils that was owned by African Americans. Today, if you go to Tulsa, you'll see they're all in great big tankers and containers, and it's all controlled, of course, by Caucasians. And African Americans aren't receiving not a dime from what belongs to them. But the Black Belt districts, they continue to grow economically. We continue to have our banks, our insurance companies. We had our we were a self-sufficient community economically. What stopped the Black Belt District was had nothing to do with white destruction. What stopped the Black Belt District continued to grow and be successful years after the destruction of Tulsa and the Greenwood District. Matter of fact, the Black Belt District continued, like I said, not only did they finance so many businesses and continued to be very successful in the Black Belt districts. What stopped the Black Belt districts from continuing to grow? They existed up until 1965, the Black Belt district, and up until 1965. It's when the Black Belt District more or less faded out. And why did the Black Belt District fade out? It didn't fade out because of no kind of destruction. It faded out because of integration. When the laws passed in 1965 or so, where African Americans now could integrate out of the black communities and can integrate in the white communities, because let's face it, America basically have always been made up of black peoples or white peoples. Communities were separated by borders. Black folks had their part of town, and white folks had their part of town. And that existence continued. As a matter of fact, it even continues today, where you have your borders that separates the black community and the white communities. The economical powers that went on in our communities because we were sufficient. Those economical powers went on until, like I said, integration, and it was integration that caused the destruction, not only it was economic integration caused African Americans to leave their black communities, and of course we integrated into the white communities. And that's what stopped the cash flow that was going on, that went on in the African-American communities. And it was also the times where the African-American communities was had a very good wealth going for them. But that's when all the wealth that was in our communities, of course, left when African-Americans left their communities. And so Black Belt, in the Black Belt districts, today you will see where you just won't see too many, very much African-American businesses in our communities at all, like it was during the time of the Black Belt District and during the time of Booker T. Washington and the business plan that Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood District, famously known as Black Belt, as Black Wall Street, those times was our most successful times in our African American history. So was during the time of segregation. So this is why today is the introduction. Ever since 1965, because to be honest with you, you could walk up to the average person and ask them about the Black Belt District, they wouldn't know what you were talking about. Many of them know something about Black Belt, but they think Black Belt was the success. They don't realize Black Belt was the, they just don't know the history of Black Belt and the Black Belt District. And more or less, this is the introduction, saying that tonight, ever since tonight is the first time since 1965 here in Washington, D.C., we have incorporated and we have purchased the Dolman name of Black Belt Wall Street. All these many years, that name has been sitting dormant and no one has bothered by bringing it back to life. And I know it was there because we just didn't know anything about the history of Black Belt and the Black Belt Wall Street. So this is our opening night. This is the night where the Black Belt is announcing itself. But the biggest thing, this is the night that we're going to do everything in our power to bring back the success of the Black Belt Wall Street. And eventually, so we are a nonprofit organization. We are a membership organization. And when we become strong enough and big enough, it is our intention to do everything in our power to take back what was taken from us economically, and that is Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It belongs to us, and soon the same way, I'm not going to say we're going to get it back the same way it was taken from us, but economically, when we become big and powerful enough, yes, then we'll be making our presence known to the federal government, state governments, and anybody else that we want back what belongs to us. And that is that huge oil flow that belongs to African Americans. Welcome to the Black Belt Wall Street and the Black Belt District. And that district runs throughout the South all the way to New York City. And that's where we're looking to have growth and have members coming from every state in this country so we can bring back the Black Belt. Brothers and sisters, like I said, we welcome you to the Black Belt. I think I might have my, so with that said, I think one of my co-hosts might be on. Ms. Williams, are you with me?
Yes, sir. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Ms. Williams. We got a small audience so far, but you and I will carry on and see if it picks up. If not, we'll make our introductions for the night, and because from here on in, we are the Black Belt Wall Street.
Well, congratulations on getting your chapter, brother, and I hope you much, much, much success with this. And surely we here in Oklahoma, of course, we'll be doing all that we can to assist you in this endeavor and helping any way that we can. But to be honest with you, I feel that this is, like you said, 1965. You know, that's a nice span of time. And no one had come forth, so it was a blessing. And this blessing seems to have fallen into our laps. So let's see what we can get done with it in terms of making things more economically available to those of us who are of African-American descent and very deserving of some of this wealth that has been spread all around, and very little to no amounts of that wealth going into our community. So let's see what kind of things that we can help with as far as getting ourselves back economically strong, because that's what's missing for us. And they're talking about, you know, building generational wealth. Well, our wealth was cut off generations ago. So now how do they plan to have us with generational growth when we've been So to speak, knocked off at the knees. Now, you were speaking of the fact that during segregation, and of course, when we were growing up, we more or less, I'll say, came in on the ending of segregation, and, you know, we speak of integration, but I don't know if we ever integrated. It was just more or less of a desegregation. Because when you went into those schools, of course, I was there, and you had little pockets of certain people in this group and pockets of us over here and at the lunch counter and the lunch cafeteria and places, and it was the same way. We never did just say, okay, now at this table you're going to have everybody, the Rainbow Coalition is going to be at this table. That didn't happen, and I don't know if it ever has, But one thing about it, we've been led astray. Like the brother said, we've been run amok and led astray for so long until it's good for people, organizations such as Black Belt District, Black Belt Wall Street, or New Black Wall Street, to take up the gauntlet. Because Brother Bilal and listeners, brothers and sisters out there in the radio listening audience, we need all the help. We can, constructive help we can get. You know, we listen to what they're talking about, what's going on there in Ukraine. Well, today I heard some very disturbing things about what's going on in Haiti. And then I heard some very, very disturbing things about the Gaza Strip. So, brother and everyone, we is in turmoil. I think the whole world, just like the brothers, the Muslim brothers were killed in New Mexico, I think around Albuquerque. So it's some undertow, and there's a lot of things going on. And what we need to do, one of the things that we need to do, I feel, is we need to have people to start making more commitments to us, because as consumers, we need to start making more demands of the things that we want. Because now we pay these people to ignore us. They drive nice, fine cars, live in nice, fine homes, dress in the height of fashion, travel, do things, go on vacation, all because we as consumers, and brother, you always mentioning it, because we put more than $1 trillion annually into this economy. And they feel that, and you know, I don't mean this as a joke, but they feel that you're getting yours back through your food stamps. So now, brothers and sisters, we need to talk about this. So, I mean, let those lights light up and let's get on this phone and talk about some things. So, Brother Bilal, that's what I'll add for now. And as we continue the discussion, chances are I'll have more to talk about, because this is the, and not only that, this is not the time to say you're not working because you don't have any jobs. You know, there are two people, you know, my brother, you know, when you first was talking, I thought about old man Wallace. Segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. He never spoke any truer words. You know, I guess he thought that he was saying that to hurt us. But segregation was good, really, for the nation. But with Ronald Reagan, he said he saw plenty jobs in the paper. He said, "You talking about jobs and job training?" He said, I see. And right now, and let me tell you something, it's not going to stay available. Those windows will close. Whether they close with you on the inside of them or on the outside of them, they will close. And let me see, as they call entry level, this has never been a better time for those of us, you know, marginal, high school diploma or less, and some training and things of this nature. If you can get in on the ground floor of some of these jobs at entry level, please do so. Because, as I said, this window will not remain open for a very long time. Good evening, brothers and sisters, and I do thank you for your time.
You know, thanks for your comments, Ms. Williams. I was, when you started talking, I didn't realize, you know, I stuttered because over the weekend, I took a trip down in Southampton County, Virginia. And, of course, Southampton County is where it was known as New Jerusalem back in the early days Well, they changed the name, of course, because of the uprising that went on with Nat Turner and those slaves that was being so harshly treated down in Southampton County. But I was down in that area just a few days ago over the weekend, like I was saying. And I went through, while driving through those rural areas, and I've seen all those cotton fields. I mean, cotton fields for hunting miles and miles. I know I drove at least 50 miles. And within that 50-mile radius that I drove, I mean, every field was cotton fields. You didn't see any corn fields or soybeans or anything like that. You saw cotton. And like I said, cotton has always been, and it still is today, the greatest commodity in the world. There is no commodity that is more valuable than cotton, and in more demanding in the world than cotton. And so driving through those cotton fields, and then looking into the history of what they say is the black belt, and like the black belt, and they was calling the black belt wasn't because we had any business plans at that time. Of course, it was the black belt because this is where America was making its money from slavery. And driving through, like I said, that part of the country that was at that time called New Jerusalem, and they, of course, it's called Cortland today. But going down there, I couldn't help but to feel the spirit of the slaves. When you look out there in those huge fields, and where you see a row, maybe a row of cotton, and that one row would be as poor as the eyes could see. And you start imagining a person being out there in that hot sun, and they are just walking this long row. And like I said, that one row is as far as long as the eye can see. And you got to walk that row, and then at the end of that row, you got to turn around and come back to the starting point of where you was at. And you think about the fact that you visualize those folks out there with those great big cotton bags. That bag was longer than the person that was dragging it. And most of them who had kids, they had their kids right on their backs, carrying their kids, maybe had something over the kids' head to keep the sun from hurting the child. But the child was out there in the field with the mother and the dad, and they're going up and down these long rows picking this cotton. And so then you figure the millions of African Americans that was doing this, and you start saying this is going on from Texas all the way to New York and all the states in between. I mean, it lets you know that when the Civil War started, between the North and the South, that war was all about slaves. And now I can see why it was all about I'm fighting to keep slavery going because, like I said, the South at that time was the economical power. The South was America's wealthiest states, all because of the monies that was produced by slaves. And certainly, it's like owning gold. If someone is going to come and take my claim, are going to take my gold, I am going to fight you for it. So this is it's why the South put up such a serious fight to stay out of the Union and keep the Union out of the South, because of they didn't want anybody messing with their gold. And that goal was African Americans because of the monies that they produced for this country. So white folks fought and killed each other because the wealth they was making from black peoples. And so again, my going through that part of the country where Nat Turner and that uprising is, and I even visit the plot that they have out there on Nat Turner and the little reading that they have on him. But very, very rich history. And I was talking to some of the citizens down there, and they start telling you about the conditions and the places down there, what do they call the crossroads. I'll get into a lot of that. As a matter of fact, I am going to have representatives from that area to come on, because that's where our beginnings start, in those areas. And today there is still terrible things going on as far as African Americans who own their own farms and their own land, because of integration, most of our young folks left those rural parts of the southern areas. And I use that area as an example, but this went on all over the South. Not only the young folks, but families simply left the South. And like I said, during that migration, millions just moved out south and went north. But today, many of the families that continued to live in the South that own some of the farms and land, many of them are old today. Their age is up in the numbers. And I noticed that while I was down. As a matter of fact, I got into a conversation with some of the community folks down there, because one of the things that is going on in the South, and I can use this area as an example, but I spoke to some others and got information. But when it comes to financial planning, professional financial planning, estate planning, these folks have no idea what you're talking about. Saying that to say, when it comes to the land that African American, especially the farmers, actually own and have been owning for generations, The young folks, like I said, and many have left the South. And when they left the South, they never bothered to continue to be involved in communities activities, even though a lot of the communities activities was their own families' farms that they actually own. And so when the older folks, and they're still going on, many of the folks who live in the South that never left, that stayed on the properties, they're dying. But the relatives that left the southern areas, many of them might have died, but their heirs, the young folks in their families, they don't even know about some of their heritage as far as their estates and what has been left to them, because they didn't do wills. As a matter of fact, getting into wills and getting into setting up their estate, or trying to secure their estate, like I said, the word estate itself is over most of their heads. They don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm talking about educated folks, because again, when it comes to estate planning, financial planning, they don't get very much of that even today in the South. I found out that in order to get a will in many, many parts of the South, and this is going right on down in Southampton County, and most of these lawyers you're going to find are white lawyers, but they tell me that the ones who try to get a will, the lawyers are charging them as much as $3,000 to $5,000 just for a simple will. And of course, most of the poorer folks will not have $3,000 to $5,000, but in my opinion, from talking to these folks, and I told them, the reason they're putting these high charges on you to come in for you to get a will or get some sort of estate planning information or advice, these folks really don't want you to have this information. The reason they don't want you to have this information, yes, they realize and they know that African Americans don't have wills. They don't realize very much about their estates. They don't know how to handle their estates once someone dies. And many of them have left the areas. They live, like I said, up in the northern cities. And white folks don't do nothing but after whoever the homeowner die down there, they just simply move in on the farms. Don't say nothing to nobody. Matter of fact, they don't even know who to say anything to, but they could find out by going through the public records. And mention public records, most African Americans, deal too much with public records. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if they can get information on too much on public records unless they probably go and hire an attorney who doesn't have their interests at heart or in mind. So it's the information, and of course, when you don't know information about estate planning, then yes, you're going to, as they say, just simply get ripped off. And this is what I am seeing going on. I witnessed it myself just a few days ago, where African Americans. And the African Americans pointed out to me, that farm right there is owned by the artist family. That farm over there is owned by the Francis or the Bynums or what have you. But white folks are on the Boone's estate, on the Francis estate. They've been there. They're growing their cotton on the land. Why? And they ain't paying nobody a dime for the uses of the land. Why? Because no one is coming forward to say, this is my land. This is my grandfather's land. This is my great-great-grandfather's land. I am the heir to the property. No, it wasn't willed to me, but I am the surviving heir, which means it belongs to me. They don't realize this information. And like I said, when they try to hire lawyers, most of the lawyers are Caucasians, and they're taking their monies, but they're not really giving them good professional financial advice. And then when it comes to financial planners, again, the same situation. Very few African Americans are in the that profession. So a lot of ripoff is going on. A lot of stealing is going on. And sometimes they're just simply not stealing. They're just been using your land, making millions of dollars year after year, using your land, because we as African Americans are not there to even realize that you own the land. Because, like I said, it could be situations where generations have gone by, and some of the younger folks who parents who knew about it, they don't have this information. Nothing is written down. Like I said, there was no estate planning. Nobody do estate planning. There was no will. There were no executives of the estate. And you got a real bad situation going on. And like, this is why I'm saying African Americans that migrated away from the South, many of us now are retiring and we're moving back to the South. But there is a lot of information that we as African Americans don't know anything about, because we never went back to do the research on our family heritage. And what was, like I said, the estate may have been left to your grandparents or your mother and father, but when they deceased, you were the living heir. And now that you're the surviving living heir, and you can prove that you're the surviving living heir, the estate belongs to you. But most of us don't realize how to go by looking into our financial estates and closing out the estates whereby you can obtain and own your properties and assure if someone is on my property making money, then they owe me, or I need to kick them off my properties and stop them from producing, making so much money without paying me. It's going on in the South. I witnessed it myself just a few days ago. So the South has always been where the African Americans, well, the South is what made America rich. But the South is also what made many African Americans rich. But we're losing what belongs to us simply because we don't know how to manage or how to deal with estate planning. So there is so much to do as far as the Black Belt Wall Street and all the districts that the Black Belt Wall Street created. We want to redo those districts, but boy, we got so much work that we need to do in the South to because that's where our and when I say our wealth is, that's where not only our wealth, but that's where we can still afford to go and build not only our homes but our businesses. Because in the South, it's still affordable to do things. That migration that we did during the 50s, leaving the South, was during during the early 20s, we need to go back and start building our communities back up in the South. Because that's where the power of the African Americans, and that's where still the power of the wealth of this country is still coming from, the labor of African Americans, of what they did starting in the South. Again, ranging all the way from Texas throughout all the southern states, all the way to New York. So that's what the Black Belt is all about. And like I said, we start off here with our network marketing and business identification. That means that we want a network to get to know Black businesses, and then we want to identify Black businesses so we can tell our communities where these Black businesses are and try to do as much as we can to persuade our communities to do business in the Black communities, and not only persuade our communities to do business with the Black businesses in their communities, we also want to persuade our communities to become each other's assets so we can build businesses all over the South like we did during the time of Booker T. Washington, the business plan of Booker T. Washington and the Greenwood Business District that's famously known as Black Belt Wall Street. We want to bring that back together. And we know that our biggest production, our biggest success is going to be in the South. So as we speak right now, brothers and sisters, of course, Black Belt Wall Street, we know we have done a real good job by coming together and buying the buildings that we have purchased and down in Selma, Alabama. But now we have another venture, as you know, like I said, we're trying to rebuild the Black Belt as aggressively as we possibly can. And like I said, Selma, Alabama was our kickoff point showing the value of being each other's assets. And when I say being each other's assets, we don't want to go to the white banks and have them to charge us these high interest rates. And another thing, these same white banks that are charging us these high interest rates, they ain't doing up lending us back our own monies, because what happens to the monies that we currently and have been putting in ever since we started integrating with white folks and left our Black communities? Because during the time of segregation, we had our own banks. But now that we don't have our own banks and there are no banks nowhere, no Black neighborhood belongs to us, we have to put our monies into the Caucasian Bank. And the Caucasian Bank, when the money goes through the clearance house in the Federal Reserve, and then the monies are exchange commission, send back the monies to the communities that made the deposits. It comes back to our communities, but our communities is the white communities. That's where the banks are. We don't have any banks in the black communities. So again, saying that when our bank's money comes back to the black communities, why is it that we can't go on in the banks and say, look, we want millions of dollars. That's what we put into the bank. Well, we want the millions of dollars to flow back into our communities. No, well, we can't go in there because, again, the monies don't no longer belong to us. Once we put our monies into that bank through our churches, through our consumer spendings, through our tax, wherever it is, once it goes out of our hands and it goes into the banks, it's helping everybody else but our own black communities. Therefore, we realize that by becoming each other's assets, we can do what we did down in Selma, putting up, investing our funds, buying the blocks. And when I say buy the blocks, we're purchasing everything in the communities that we're trying to buy. We want to buy the entire block. Because then we own, and in this case we did, we went down there and we bought as much as our monies would allow us to buy. And those buildings that we did buy, it was to my understanding that we may have put up around $500,000, but after purchasing the buildings, the values of those buildings went up in about a year, and all of a sudden, those of us who put monies up and purchased the buildings for $500,000, those same buildings now are worth $2 or $3 million if we wanted to sell them. But we don't want to sell them. We're going to grow those businesses. We're going to go up six or seven, tear down the old buildings and go up six or seven stores, and but that's Tulsa. That's a done deal. We're still doing things down there. We still look for investments. But what we have done is an example of what direction we're trying to go. And now we're working on a second investment because we're trying to go around eventually all over the country, many parts of the country, and start buying businesses right in our black communities. And the next one is Tampa, Florida. As we speak, we are trying to, we are negotiating a deal as to where we're going to have, right down in the heart of Tampa, right downtown Tampa, a resort. Like I said, a resort. This is right on the water. And, it's owned already by African Americans. African Americans have been owning this prime property in Tampa for years, but they're ready to retire. But they want the African Americans to continue to own this property. They know they could put it on the market and make twice the amount of money that they are offering and selling it to us for. So so because they want it to stay in the hands of African Americans. So brothers and sisters, again, we're going to be putting out information on Tampa and that resort that we are planning on putting up down in Tampa. And I say us, Black Belt Wall Street, and our members that will be coming on. And of course, like I said, we're looking to, we'll be sharing information Brother Harris. Who
yes, sir, I'm here.
Oh, Brother Harris is right here with us. Again, you hear, I don't need to say too much more. Why don't you go ahead and, Brother Harris, I was trying to speak until I didn't know if you could come on this evening because, like you said, this is our introduction tonight. This is our first introduction. So I'm going to let you take over for a moment, Brother Harris, and share information on Black Belt and also the investments that the second investment that we shouldn't be missing out on. And I know many who missed out on the first one said how much they regretted. So again, like I said, we're looking to go in many, many cities, but we're going into our second city, and that's Tampa, Florida. So Brother Harris.
Thank you, Brother Bynum, Brother Aziz. I mean, just listening to you, I've been on for about the last 40 minutes, and it's been absolutely amazing. So we thank you for your leadership and what you're doing for the Black Belt Wall Street Association. There's just so much to unpack, and I'm going to start just by recapping what I was listening to. For those people that are listening, whether you're on the call now or you're listening to it on a podcast afterwards, we are the heirs of the Black Belt District. We are the heirs of the Black Belt District. We are sitting in acres of diamonds in our own backyards. We have wealth beyond measure when we begin working together. We are the Fort Knox of the South. Black America, African Americans, we are the Fort Knox. We are what built the wealth of America on our ancestors for free labor and wealth throughout this country. And as I was listening to Brother Bynum, not only did he explain what the Black Belt District was very well, he gave you some personal in-depth eyewitness information that is invaluable. There are hundreds of cities all across this country that need our help, that need us to band together and put our money as our own bank as opposed to going to these other organizations that don't respect our money and don't respect our values. So we are working tirelessly. We have multiple projects that we're working on. Selma, Alabama was the first one for our groups to be able to come together and buy up the block. That project has already started. There will be another announcement for opportunities in Selma as well. Now we're focused on Tampa, Florida. Tampa, Florida had a very high population of African Americans that own land in probably one of the jewels of the South, which is Tampa, Florida. A lot of people kind of looked at Tampa, Florida as this sleepy town on the west coast of Florida as a retirement center. If you can look now, it is no longer a retirement center. It is becoming the financial capital of the South. Tampa, Florida is becoming the financial capital of the South. This is where all the Wall Street banks are moving to. The large corporations through this pandemic have realized that they have been spending money unnecessarily, and they're going somewhere where not only can they get more value, but they can also get more talent. Tampa has attracted talent in every sector, in every market, from IT, from medical, from bioresearch, from engineering, from construction to design, banking, finance, real estate, development. It is the number one real estate growth market in America, and we happen to have multiple African-American families that have land in prime locations that do not want to sell to the other developers. They want to sell to African-American developers to develop something that will be here 50, 100 years down the road. So we have an opportunity to be able to have a major piece of land asset in Tampa, Florida, in the heart of the African-American community, less than a mile from the Hillsborough River. It is on a main corridor, one of the most popular corridors in Tampa, Florida. When you look at where this property is located, It is absolutely the future. Now, I'm born and raised in Tampa. This community, what I'm talking about, it is the most vibrant African-American community that I've ever seen. If you want an example of what a black belt district could be, this area is it. This area in Tampa, Florida, has produced appellate court judges, has produced some of the top baseball athletes and football and basketball athletes that you've ever seen. Tampa, Florida has one of the highest concentrations of investment bankers that are African Americans, has one of the highest concentrations of CPAs. And a lot of times they don't get the recognition because they're not seen. They don't even know that they're there, that they exist. But they're amazing men and women that pushed forward and started the first African-American newspaper, which is still in existence. Right here in Tampa, Florida, is where the National Association of the Real Estate Brokers was born in 1947. A group of men and women from Chicago, from New York, from D.C., they came to Tampa, Florida, and they started the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. The reason why they started that is because NAR would not allow us to have membership, would not allow us to be able to access data and information and sell properties. So NARAB had to create an organization that gave African-American men and women that were real estate professionals the ability to engage and to help our families achieve home ownership. But one of the things that we're doing now is that we're taking that history and we're going to take it back, because we are the heirs of the black belt. We are the heirs of the black belt. There is so much history that we are leaving on the table because we're not coming together in a way to where we can harness that. But that day is over. The Black Belt Wall Street organization is coming together all over America, all over the world, to show African-American men and women that not only can we work together, we're going to thrive together. So right now, the opportunity for investment opportunities in Tampa, Florida are open. I will be able to share more detail with you, Brother Bottom, so that we can get it out to the group. And right now, we're in the middle of contract negotiation for this piece of property. So with that being said, I want to thank you for all the hard work that you've been doing for all these years, and that I am honored to be working alongside you and Brother RZ. Thank you.
And thank you, Brother Harrison. But brothers and sisters, and Brother Harrison, be back with you. But I would suggest you get information from Brother Harris and about being an investment in this development. And he'll be able to give you, when he comes back, information where you can communicate with him and get information as to how you can become an investor in this new project that Black Belt Wall Street is offering. So with that said, I think we had my co-host did come in. Brother Aziz, welcome to the show, and we'll welcome your comments. Brother Aziz. Okay, he must have stepped away here. He had himself on mute. One
no,
two.
Brother. Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I couldn't say nothing, but the whole time I was in therapy, I was listening to the program.
Okay.
And you covered a lot of information, as Brother Harris said, and I was glad to hear what Brother Harris had to say. I did have a question that Brother Harris asked him. Is he still on? What was the name of the old African American high school in Tampa?
So there's multiple high schools in Tampa. It's Blake High School was one of the historical high schools in Tampa. Then we have Robinson, and then we have Booker T. Washington. But it would probably be Blake is the school you're referring to. That's where some of the most prominent ball players that has ever come into any national football, basketball, baseball league They've come from Tampa, Florida. It's an unknown story because people don't talk about it. You only talk about it when you see them on the field, but when you learn where they come from. If you look at Deion Sanders is a product of Tampa, Florida. His family, he was raised down in Fort Myers. And one of the most iconic quarterbacks ever to walk across any field was Doug Williams. Doug Williams,
right,
quarterback Tampa when Tampa was the one horseshoe town that most people just kind of overlooked.
Yeah.
Tampa is no longer that. It is the epic center of the financial center for Wall Street. This is their playground in the South, and they're moving here in groves. And for those individuals that want to be able to be a part of the investment opportunities, Tampa is a great place not only to live, work, play, but to invest for the future and create generational wealth for you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you, bro. Thank you. I just wanted to say that to a lot of people that Tampa Bay is a very beautiful area. Tampa is a very beautiful city. And as Brother Harris said, there's a lot going on. The reason why I asked that question, Brother Harris, was back in the day when I left school around 1966. You know, we at that time, schools hadn't been integrating. We used to play basketball and football against one another. That's why I was trying to remember the name of the high school, because the African-Americans back in those times, back in the 60s and the 50s, we had some great athletes. A lot of people don't know Bob Hayes down in Florida and all that, you know, down in, you know, Florida A&M, you know. We had a lot of athletes in the state of Florida, but Tampa, for a long time, people have thought, as you said, Tampa wasn't nothing going on there. It's a lot going on. Tampa is a port city, in case a lot of people don't know that. So that's another reason for good investment. When you have port cities, they're always active with business.
That's right.
You know, and that's what I, you know, and then it's going to pick up with that way. You know, a lot of the businesses open it up as a seaport. So that's something, you know, you like the investors that are interested in investing in Tampa. Those are a lot of the incentives that you have government coming there, but as Brother Harris said, professionally, it's a plethora of professionals there. So hopefully, you know, this year will be an encouragement for investors. But that's primarily what I had to say, Brother Bilal, in that part there. And thank you for letting me come on in.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. Brother Bynum, I wanted to one more thing on Tampa. With the opportunity that we have for this piece of property, this family can sell this piece of property on the open market double what they've agreed to sell it to us for.
Yes.
Because they're not concerned with how much money they get today. They want the property to stay in the hands of African Americans for the future. Once this development is done, this will be an over a $80 million project that will have housing, mixed use, multi-families, and this will be the first time in the history of Central Florida, maybe even all of Florida, that we have the opportunity for an African-American development group to be able to do something unique and special that has never been seen. And so what we have to do is recognize this time and not be complacent, not be waiting on the bridge, because, you know, weight is what broke the bridge. We have to be able to come together and say we want to be a part of what's not only happening here in Tampa, but Selma and other places alike. So the opportunity, I've never seen it greater. You may hear information about inflation and gas and taxes. Let me tell you something. People are making more money than they've ever made right now. While everybody's focused on the noise, you got people making money. Please don't get caught up in the noise of what they're saying on the news. You need to get on the ground. If this is not something you want to be a part of, do something in your own community. Look to your own community and look around and see what's happening. in your community. There's opportunities that you've probably never seen before. But the only way that you're going to get it is that you got to see it, and then you got to seize it. Thank you, Brother Bonham.
Yes, again, I direct, and of course, Brother Harris is one of the directors and a member of the board of Black Belt Wall Street. But I just want to say, when it comes to our network marketing and, like I said, business identification, and I was saying, not only do we want to identify businesses in our communities, but we want to grow businesses. And, of course, the one down in Tampa is what I consider a very large investment. But at the same time, for those who are looking to let me just simply say, for those of us who look to get wealthy, then the type of investment that we're talking about in Tampa, you have no other choice but to become a wealthy. When you start talking about, I just bought a property for whatever amount of money, $2 or $3 million, and that $2 or $3 million turned into an $80 million development. Just look at the amount of money that you're going to now be making every year once that development is completed. Now you're a part owner of something that is going to be around for hundreds of years. So that's what we consider a major investment, and that's what we're doing. Black Belt Wall Street, I tell you, we're bringing back the Black Belt. So major investment is
absolutely
what we're looking to do. We're looking to bring back our banks. We're looking to bring back our financial institutions. We're looking to bring back our own real estate ownerships. So, again, major investments, but at the same time, we still look at every business and the small businessman who we used to call mom and pop stores. We're looking at those investors, those businesses too, because the small business, if he's small, then he may want to become just a little larger. So he may take on investors where he's right now doing vending, but from vending of being a vendor, he's ready now to go into a brick and mortar, having his own place, buying his own place, and of course, like I said, buying your business right in the Black community is affordable. You don't have to worry about trying to rent too much, because you can afford to buy a business in your own Black communities, because again, those Black communities, white banks and white folks, because of redlining, they don't see these communities as being valuable. That's why we have to take the that's why we need to rush and start building businesses right in our own communities. Because I'm going to tell you right now, brothers and sisters, those Black communities that I'm telling you that are invaluable, it's not going to be that way very long. I just finished telling
you,
right, myself, and folks are taking up Black folks' businesses and properties. If these African Americans aren't able to get their properties back through their inheritance, they ain't going to be able to buy these properties back. Because once the white folks get their hands on your properties in the Black communities, the cost is going to go way up on you. So again,
mm-hmm,
while you have the opportunities to be an owner, or you may already be an owner, but you're just not making your properties valuable, then you may want to get with and of course I've heard is that I have this property, but I don't have cash to develop my properties. See, this is where communities, business associations are very important, because someone may own something that is valuable, but you have, or a group of you have the cash to develop on the land. I mean, I go to places, like I said, by going down south or going to any community. If I wanted to go get my car washed, there ain't a black car wash that I can go to in any community that I know I can go get my a car wash. So again, even something, and actually ain't nothing simple about owning a car wash. Car washing, you can make a whole lot of money. But I'm saying, it's the type of business that you you can get into, and if you can't do it alone, it's the type of business where just a few of you can get that particular business. In other words, small businesses is obtainable. The businesses that we're talking about in Tampa, of course, that's large business. Large business, of course, we're looking for those who can afford to be in large business. But those of you who can't afford the large business, in other words, you look at one of a major development, and in order for you to get in at the major development, it may cost you $50,000 just to come in on the floor. And that the floor is the lowest investment you can make. Thereby, if you go in with a small business, then each of you can come in with about $10,000. And like I said, you can start your car wash. Maybe just five of you. You can start your car wash and start your small business and let the small business turn into a larger business. But the whole idea, brothers and sisters, is starting businesses in black communities, because black communities are ghost towns. And when I say ghost towns, that means they do not own businesses. Anytime you see a business, a community, and it do not have business participation, your community is no more than a ghost town, and it's not going to ever get the values that the communities that have businesses in them, they're the ones who's got the equities in their homes are going to go up. Everything is going up in value. If your community, because there are no businesses, you ain't getting those equity values. Matter of fact, you just put red lines in your own business and your own communities, because not only are you not going to get the same equities from your house because of no businesses, I doubt that the banks or anybody's going to look at it, equities appear, because there is just no economical growth in your community. And this is what I'm saying. The black communities all over this country, we need to, that migration, that we need to migrate back. And by migrating back, we need to bring on commerce, because this commerce that we're bringing on now can, I don't see how it cannot change your financial situation because of the need of businesses in the black community. So, like I said, brothers and sisters, this is our introduction night. We are a business association. We are a membership association. We look for your memberships. But most of all, we're looking to start a business association in your communities after you become members. We now want to start showing you how to start network marketing and business association by bringing on business activities in your communities that brings the business folks together so they can have business meetings. And these business meetings can be in the different black businesses that are in your area, spreading it around and networking and marketing with each other. But at the same time, you're going to find that these network marketing and business meetings and identifying with each other is going to be quite enjoyable, because ask yourself, as a business person, if I was going to say every Friday our business association is meeting, and it's meeting either in a business place or I'm having it at my house or what have you, but the enjoyment, first of all, that you're going to have just by business folks coming together, and also the clientele that you possibly can have right there by having such business meetings. I know now my investment broker. I know the real estate agents. I know the insurance brokers. And it just goes on and on. I know the beauticians. I know the barbers. Because you all are networking and identifying your businesses in your communities by having business meetings at least once a week. And this is the type of activities that a black belt will be inspiring, and we will be helping you to start business meetings and business associations. And those associations will be, of course, the Black Belt Business Associations. We will help you. We want you to incorporate with us. We, like I said, we have the dormant name on Black Belt, but that name, once you become a member, you can have that name in your community, and you can now start developing the same business activities as we're developing. And so we look forward to your memberships. We're not taking the memberships just yet, but I think in another week we will be giving you taking your memberships, because at that point we will have incorporate our nonprofit ID numbers, and you'll be able to use those nonprofit ID numbers, especially those of you who are business owners. You would want to whatever donations or whatever participations you have with Black Wall Street, of course, you would be able to write those activities off. But again, I'm not an accountant. Again, as a nonprofit, and you are a business person, and we will be able to share our tax ID number so you can write off. But again, when it comes to tax writing off, I'll leave that up to your accountant. But the business activities, network marketing, business association, and having business meetings in your communities, because if we don't start these business meetings in our, especially in the South, because in the South, it's quite hard for you to get professional business information because they don't want you to have it. Brother Aziz, you feel like sharing some information on that subject with us? Because I know you went through that with your estate in the South. And
yes.
Go right ahead if you would.
Yes, Brother Bilal, as a matter of fact, in a lot of the southern cities, we just don't have the legal help there, attorneys and that can guide us through real estate purchases, as well as trusts for inheritance and things like that. And it's so important that we do network, because by not having that, when you have to go to some other lawyers outside our community, they charge you a lot of money. They don't give you all the information you need. And then when you need to utilize them from after you've paid this retainer fee and all that, you realize the retainer fee, or if it's a trust, the initial funds that you've paid out is just the beginning of what you have to pay. When you need to utilize the service, that's when you have to pay a larger fee. Wherein, if we was belonging to a business organization, networking with one another, we wouldn't have to go through that. And this is bad, because down south in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, these places, a lot of blacks have their properties taken just for taxes, because people in the community, business, they don't network. They don't see who's who in the community. That property is behind on taxes or whatever, stuff like that, or being able to even get some advice. They go to the churches. They may go to the churches, the mosques, wherever they go. They're just not as getting the legal advice that they need that Black Belt Wall Street is offering, as well as the New African Business Association, on this kind of a counseling and guidance, you know, where you won't go out there and have your properties taken for nothing or a little or nothing, just a little bit piddling. So, it's important that we do be able to network, brother, blah, blah, like that, because, my brothers and I had to go through something similar in Alabama on a trust. And our mother, passed, returned to Almighty God a few years ago. We're just getting this thing settled. It's like 2 years. And, it's just unbelievable. And people say, well, you have to go through trust. It takes all that time. And that. No, it doesn't if you have the proper legal guidance. And we don't get it in most southern cities. That's the fact. And sometimes when we do get it, because we don't have a number to choose from, sometimes we get shysted on both sides. But that is an ongoing problem with us, Brother Bilal, that we don't get the type of legal advice on all matters that we need to get. And that's because we don't have any network going on. So I hope, that was able to offer some of the advice on, the necessity for us being able to have business organizations that we can go to as African Americans. You don't even have to be a part of a business organization, but if we have them in our community, business organization, that is something that the common man can go, the common man and woman can go to this business organization and see what services they offer that may be able to help them. And that's in most all other communities, except in ours. We're not saying that we don't have it in some communities, but primarily, no, we don't have it in the majority of our communities whatsoever.
Okay.
Very, very, very few.
Thanks so much, Brother Aziz, for your comments. And Brother Aziz, and of course, this Brother Harris and all of us who are associated, Black Wall Street, when we incorporated, we made certain that we put together professionals, and most of our professionals know estate planning. We have lawyers who specialize in probate. We have CPAs that work with all of our business folks. In other words, saying that we have financial planners, we have estate planners, we have real estate professionals. We're saying that to say our professionalism is what started the black belt and what it's caused us to incorporate the black belt is because we as professionals came together and just like being on this radio tonight, we're willing to give our professional services that would normally cost you sometimes $200 or $300 an hour to talk to many of our professionals, including myself as a financial planner. But we're saying, no, we're going to save our communities by giving our profession, in a lot of cases, at least for an hour or two when we're on the when we're representing black belt and not representing our own personal business, when we're representing the black belt and we're a nonprofit organization, we're saying that we're giving our profession to you now for free. So again, all you have to do is just listen and participate. Of course, we need you to be a member, because that's the only way we can share this information with you. That's the only way we can have radio shows and other ways of communications. We have to pay for it. But all of our black belt, we have professionals that make up the black belt. And these professionals are highly licensed and highly qualified, and most of the cases even certified business folks who are willing to, when it comes to black belts, we're willing to help our communities and willing to share our information for free. And like you said, brother, and your situation, Brother Aziz, I told you my going down south just over the weekend and being down there in New Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Turner and all of them came from. And I'm telling you, brother, it's something when you I'm thinking of how primitive the African Americans communities look when I got down there, and I'm talking about professionals with masters and PhDs, some of them doctors with doctor's degrees. Some of my own cousins are PhDs and doctors down there. Educators and what have you. But brother, when you start talking about business and business financing and what have you, estate planning, they just didn't have no information on nothing like that. And like they said, they when they heard somebody who is trained in the area, boy, you're talking about the community being quiet and everybody is listening. So it goes to show how much they're begging for assistance, because they don't even know, most of them don't even know how to incorporate. You hear them say, oh, man, I'm going to get me an LLC. They think an LLC is the most complicated thing in the world to get.
That's right.
They don't know just the simple application of applying for a simple LLC, but it sounds good to them. But they say it's way out of reach. So there's so much that when it comes to business, there are communities, and this is why you don't see the black community growing economically, because economics is something that for some reason has never been taught or never been suggested that we I mean, when you was mentioning a few moments ago about the ministers and the old ministers and the imams and all that, they don't know the first thing when it comes to business. Even they're making bad investments. Even they're making bad investments. So again, we got a few more moments, and I want to stop and let everybody else. But from here on in, every Wednesday, it's going to be Black Belt Wall Street. And Black Belt Wall Street is a nonprofit organization, New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street. That is our LLC for profit. One being a subsidiary of the other. But right now, until we get our communities well informed, it's going to be done through the Black Belt and the Black Belt business. Sister Williams, I'm going to get back with you for you to say a few words, and then we'll let Brother Sam close us out. Sister Williams.
Yes, sir, Brother Bilal, and this is, and I thank you for allowing me this opportunity to come back on and speak to the community regarding our situations. And it's nice to know that we are coming together as a group to put together something, you know, as we have spoken about generational wealth. Well, now it makes us feel apart, because we would also like to pass down something to our children other than our bills. We would like to pass down something to our children that they can build on. See, that's what it's all about. It's about taking this and making it better. So now the only thing that I would add a few minutes ago when you were speaking of Southampton County, and you had spoken about Crossroads, anyone who's doing their historical background or what have you, also look into what they used to call Cross Keys. That's all down around Emporia and New Jerusalem, which is Cortland and all those areas. Look at Cross Keys. So, but brothers and sisters, think about what has been shared with you this evening. Think about how we can come together as a community and put together our dollars and cents and see what we can come up with as far as investing. It's not right now in Selma or Tampa or where they're developing. Look at how we can maybe improve our communities around us. And then how we can maybe put some people together. We know, you know, we all know someone. And invite those folk in, you know, for a cup of tea and a crumpet. And invite them in and sit down and let's have this talk about investing our monies and investing in something that we can put together, as they would say, right quick. And then work on building that and making that better and using that to leverage us into another area. And we'll keep that going until we can say, okay, brothers, we're ready to talk to you now about a part of Tampa. Or we're ready to talk to you now about a part of somewhere.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shy, and I am the host of Shiloh Radio. On Motivational Monday, 7 to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time on Gospel Radio Nation. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.